Welcome to the Live Limitless podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Gigi Meyer, and we're going to be having a lot of conversations with experts in fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, in general health, but also in things like relationships, family, faith, business, sports, you name it. And we really just want this to be a space where you can learn how to break through all the things holding you back from living to your true potential one by one. It's time to live limitless. Let's dive in. What's up, everybody? Guess who we have in the his house today? Shells. Whoop, 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 whoop. Shells, welcome to the Live Limitless podcast. Are you excited?
Very excited and humbled to be asked to be on here with you, Gigi.
You should feel humbled, very humbled. You're the real celebrity everyone's been wanting to hear from. So the time has come.
All right. I'm up for it. I'm here for it.
Is this your first podcast? No,
no,
you've done it with me and Nikki, yeah. T. Meyer.
Yep. Yeah. No, I've been on before.
What ones have you
once
done?
Once or twice with you and Nikki.
Yeah. Yeah. It was our very first one where we said that you have to raise your hand.
Yeah.
Did that hurt your feelings at all?
No, no. You guys were in control that day. I was fine with it.
Yeah. But yeah, you made appearances a couple of times. We need to get that one started back up. That was a fun one.
That was fun. You guys were funny.
Yeah. So what's up in your world today? What's going on? What'd you do today?
Oh, well, I had coffee in bed while reading my emails. And then I went and took a body pump class and did some cardio at a local gym. And then I ran a couple of errands.
Was it EOS?
EOS.
Nice.
EOS Fitness. Yes. I'm going to join that gym. I've just been paying guest fees so far. Good. Because I want to make sure I wanted to join, but they have the classes that I really like. So I'm going to join there.
Yeah.
And then I did some errands and then this is what retired people do. I sprayed off the pool deck and got the debris off the pool deck.
Woo.
And then I sat out in the sun for a little bit.
Wow. Well, one thing that I remember you did all the time growing up at all the different houses that we've lived in, like some yards we had huge yards and some we didn't have very big yards, but you were a huge fan of mowing the lawn. That was like your thing. And now you can't really do that here.
Well, my mower isn't here yet. So that's why I haven't done it, but
you will do it.
I will, because I mean, I'm used to mowing for like 3 hours and mind you, it wasn't a riding mower, right?
Yeah.
No, it was a walk behind. So I'm used to mowing like big, really big yards for a long time. And I love that. I've been doing that since I was 8. That was one of my chores on the farm, was mowing. But my mower isn't here yet. And I think we have 2 strips of grass. That might take me 15 minutes here.
If that.
It's 1, 2, and then in the back 1.
You should run your own business and mow everyone's grass in the neighborhood.
Even the next door neighbor.
Yeah. Better not listen to this podcast. I doubt it.
I don't think you will.
That's hilarious. I remember just how many people just thought that was like just awesome about you. Question though, when's the last time dad mowed a yard?
Oh, wow. I don't know if he did it in Gainesville. He definitely didn't.
So it's been at least 15 years.
15 or 20 years.
And you've done it all.
I've always done it, but I like it. I like to do it. I mean, I wanted to do it. He would not do it right. So, you know, if he tried, he wouldn't do it right. So I have to do
it. Why do you like to do it?
It's very therapeutic. You know, you get all these steps, you're out in the sun. And it just, I don't know. It's, you'd put music on and it's just, you just go. It's like either you're walking on a treadmill or you're mowing the grass and then it's productive. And then it, you know, you got your grass mowed.
Wow. That's awesome. Do you know how many lawns I've mowed in my life?
You didn't do any.
I've never done one.
I never made you kids do it. Now Nate has done a few because he used to ride the riding mower at the lake house. Mm-hmm. But even when Nate was a baby, I used to have him in a backpack. Do you remember?
No, you
were at school. You didn't know, but I would put him in a backpack and he would fall asleep with his head against the back of my head while I was mowing in South Bend.
Oh, actually I do remember that a little bit. How crazy is that though? He's engaged.
Yes. And 23.
Callie, who is the greatest person ever.
Best. She will be the best sister-in-law ever.
How does that make you feel? Like Nate's like the baby of the family. Like he's always been your baby.
I know. I think he's still too young, but I mean, 23. He's 23.
I know. And he's been dating. They've been dating each other for like literally as long as Brian and I have been together. 10 years.
Since seventh grade.
Yeah. Since 2013, like almost 10 years.
No, we're of course very happy that he and Callie are, you know, met each other and stayed together and now we're going to be married, and we couldn't ask for a better daughter-in-law. Aww. Definitely. She's wonderful. I know. You know she is. She's wonderful.
She's amazing. And her family is amazing. And her family.
The fun family.
The in-laws are like the most ideal.
I need them in our life. They're the fun family.
But speaking of, one of the reasons why you did the mowing of the lawn, you like to get in steps. You have this like obsession with steps now, and you have this thing that you do every day. Now what's it called? Tell us a little bit about that.
It's called Shelley's Loop. Yes. And since we've been in Sarasota, I like to ride my bike to Siesta Key Beach, which is, you know, it's just a bonus to ride your bike because the traffic is so bad for part of the year. So getting in a car is ridiculous. Ride my bike
and
parking is ridiculous. So you ride your bike. It's 2.5 miles. I've got it down to 15 and a half minutes. Mm. I get my bike there, lock my bike up, walk the beach. It takes 2 hours to walk all the way to the end and touch the wall and all the way back, and then ride my bike back. So I have a 2.5 hour loop. Mm-hmm. You've done it.
I've done it. And my calves were destroyed the next day.
And that sand is so, I have to check the tide to make sure the tide is low.
How do you check the tide?
I ask Siri and she pulls up a tide chart and I see when high tide was, when low tide was, and then I can make my decision on what time to go, because high tide is not good.
Because you can't touch the wall.
You can't touch the wall and the sand, there's too much soft sand. Mm. And so I like to go when it's lower tide, and you have to touch the wall when you get to the other end or it doesn't count.
Yeah. So then what do you do when it's high tide? Do you swim to the wall?
No, I actually just touch another part that's not my fault. So it's as far as I can get and I touch and then I go back.
I mean, if you really want to take it next level, you would swim and then it will be like a triathlon, you know, you're biking, walking and then swimming.
I never thought of that. I have done a sprint triathlon before.
Yeah,
so that's
you
what
have.
It would be.
Yes.
And a
triathlon.
Funny story for Rock City people. Pastor Chad was down here in December.
Yes.
And your dad went to play tennis. So I'm left with Pastor Chad. So I'm like, well, you're either going to sit here by yourself or you can come do my loop. So, and he's a runner. So, you know, when he first heard, oh, bike, walk, bike, whatever. And he said, I almost killed him that day.
Yeah. Everyone comes back from Shelley's Loop and they're like dying.
And it's a walk.
But
it's
walk. I don't know. It's a pretty fast walk and it's long. It's really long, but
it's really good.
I enjoy it. I just can't do it as much as you do it.
I just did it like four or five days in a row. And then today I took a body pump class so I could lift some weights. Take a break.
That's awesome. I love that. And you won't even, we have a scooter that you're more than welcome to take, but she refuses everyone. She has to bike.
You got to ride the bike.
It's cheating if you scooter.
You got to ride the bike.
Oh, I love it. Well, that's a pretty cool tradition, I think. I think that's really cool. It's very healthy. You get outside, you get vitamin D, you get movement, you know, like
people watching is great.
Probably meet some pretty cool people.
Oh, we get OHs. Well, I don't get as much attention as when dad's with me, but people do. There is one couple in particular that recognizes me every time. And every time I walk by them, he says, OH.
Oh.
And we get, there's a lot of fun people out there. Now when you do it so many days a week, you get to know who the regulars are.
Mm-hmm.
There's the greeter lady.
The greeter.
She's always standing up clapping. Show me your smile. Thank you.
I haven't met her yet.
Oh, you haven't seen the greeter. She's new this year. She's out there every day that I'm there. There's a guy with a stick and a frisbee doing some kind of dance
and
in the water.
And he's dancing and throwing the frisbee.
Yep, that's frisbee guy.
The sandcastle guy.
The old sandcastle guy. And then there's a younger sandcastle guy who has a big beard. And he builds a couch in the sand.
And he sits on it?
Well, he invites people to sit on it and let your stress go away. He said,
that is awesome.
Posts all these messages. This is where you sit and just think and just be and just let all your stress go out of your body. So there's that.
And then you're the loop lady.
I'm Shelly's loop. I'm Shelly's loop. I always wonder if people would look at me and like, oh my gosh, she's done this like that's 4 days loop in lady. A row.
There's the sand lady. There's the cheer lady. The greeter. The frisbee guy. And then the loop lady. That's awesome.
So funny.
Well, cool. Well, thank you again for joining me today. But I think just in general, I was excited about this because I feel like there's just so much about you that the world just doesn't know much about. And I'm excited to talk about it a little bit more. And you're a pretty interesting person.
I don't know how there's anything people don't know about me because I was on Twitter for several years.
I know, but I don't know. I think there's still just a part of your story. And that's what I want to just talk about today. A part of your story that just makes you, you. And I think it's the coolest thing ever. And I'm excited to kind of like, cause you're not somebody who really likes to talk about yourself much, you know? And so, I'm excited and whether this is going to be uncomfortable for you or not to talk about yourself. I'm excited to just talk about a little bit more, but one of the biggest things that I think is unique about you, and I know a lot of women, you know, take on this role of obviously raising their kids, but, as a single mom, like, you know, they are a single mom, but you had a husband who just worked all the time. Mm-hmm. But you basically took on the role of a single mom and raising three kids. Not to say that we are perfect, but we're pretty close to perfect. I'm just kidding.
You're pretty awesome.
Nate's like 99.9% perfect. I'm like 70. Me and Nick, you're like 70%, but for three kids that do pretty well, and you know, raising us, how did you manage to raise three kids, you know, and I don't want to discredit dad. Dad was an amazing dad. He was just gone a lot. Like he just worked a lot and you took the role of being kind of like the dad and the mom. But whenever dad was around, he would always give us everything we ever wanted.
Mm-hmm. Softy.
Yeah. He was a softy because he knew he wanted that time and that like relationship with us. And you were more of like the discipliner, but yeah, how did you manage to raise three kids, like pretty much as a single mom?
Well, I grew up the oldest of four, mm-hmm. but then my youngest brother was born when I was 18 and I was already in college. So I can't say I'm the oldest of five. I am, but I didn't take care of him, but I was the oldest of four and I did a lot of taking care of my siblings and I babysat all the time. I nannied. I had a lot of experience taking care of kids and I'm a nurse too. And I'm a caretaker. Mm-hmm. That's just what I am. And, I credit God. I just have to always bring up God. Mm-hmm. I have to bring up God because doing the job of raising you three kids and having you turn out so great. Oh my gosh, that's the blessing of God that he gave me the strength to do that. Mm-hmm. Luckily, like as opposed to your sister who has three kids, 2 years apart, I had you and Nikki 2.5 years apart. And then I had a little break until, you know, you were, I don't know, eight,
five,
Nikki no, was five, eight. You were 5.5 and then Nate was born. So I had a little break. So then I could do, and I planned it. Yes. I planned it, people. I get asked all the time if Nate isn't oops. No, he is not an oops. He was totally planned. And then it was like easy raising him because you guys were already raised and you were helpful and he was such a good baby. So, you know what? I bet so many moms would just agree with me when I say, you just do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. You just do it. I mean, your dad worked a lot. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a 9-to-5er, that came home and helped with everything. Not that he wasn't helpful. He was when he was there, but I just did it. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of friends and I was, you know, in Christian Women's Club and in play groups. And I had a network when you girls were little in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I had mentors that had kids older and that they were older. The moms were older than me that could help me along the way. And
yeah,
we just did it. And thank goodness you guys were pretty good kids too.
Yeah. I feel like I hear that too all the time where it's like people who have kids who might not be ready for kids. I feel like when you're forced in a position to figure it out, like you just do.
You right? have to. You have what's to. The alternative?
Sink or swim, right? Yeah. But so thinking of like just your early motherhood, weren't you a grad student when you had us as kids?
You. When I had you.
Okay.
Nikki, I was not in school when Nikki was born, but I was had 6 months or one semester left in my master's program when you were born, and you went to class with me for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that. Well, I don't know if I remember it, but I remember you saying that.
Yeah. You don't remember it, but, my graduate program was about 12 women getting a master's in psych nursing, and every woman in there was a grandma, except for me. I was the youngest person in the class. So when I brought you, they all held you. Passed you around all class. So, they were really excited to have you in class. So you have part of a master's degree. All right.
Oh, let's go. I should go back to finish it. Master's of what is it?
Psych nursing. Psychiatric nursing.
I don't know if I would be a good one of those, but
I think you would.
Another one of my favorite stories of like being a mom, early mom, was how you got, scolded for bringing Nikki to a football game when she was what, 2 days old?
Yes. 2 days old. Yes. Nikki was born September 20th. We were at Colorado State. So really early in our career, that was Dad's first big job. And it was September. It was beautiful. Colorado is beautiful in September. It was an 80 degree day. And I mean, as soon as I had Nikki and the doctor came in to check on me and all that, and I said, hey, can I take her to the game on Saturday? This was Thursday. She was born on a Thursday. I had said, can I take her to the game on Saturday? And he's like, he was a real young guy, my doctor. He was awesome. He goes, yeah, sure. Just, you know, the weather's going to be fine. Go ahead. As long as you feel good. Mm-hmm. And I felt perfectly fine.
Mind you, she had all of us natural, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. No epidurals.
Savage.
I had a little bit of drugs with Nikki. But I had no drugs at all.
Oh my gosh.
So I put her in one of those front carriers and I mean, I was a little sore. So I rode the elevator up to get to my seat, and I was in the elevator with a bunch of older ladies, and I got Nikki here, and they're like, oh, let me see the baby. She's so cute. How old is she? I said, 2 days. They're like, what are you doing here with a 2-day-old baby? I'm like, it's fine. The weather's fine. She slept the whole entire time.
You didn't give her one of those big old like ear things that you see some kids have.
Didn't need any headphones.
She just slept.
I had to feed her once and that was it.
Okay, cool. And so we got a little bit older, right? Maybe Nate was born, and I mean, you've always been teaching clinicals, but before that, when you were a psych nurse, you were working in a psych hospital.
A floor nurse.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing? What ages were we?
So that was in Colorado. I did work in the hospital.
So before Nate was born.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I always worked a little. I didn't work full time. I worked PRN, which just, you know, when I would get called in, which actually was probably 2 days a week, I got called in to be a sub for somebody who was sick or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when I got my master's, I actually had a job for 32 hours a week at the hospital. And you guys went to a friend of mine's house for daycare.
Oh.
And she had a couple of other little kids, and she had one of her own, and it was just down the street from us. So that's where you went.
Did you have to like pay?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I had to pay for childcare.
Yeah,
but it was a friend. It was in her house. And so I didn't have to take you to a daycare then, which I felt pretty good about, because you got to play all day with your friends.
Yeah. And you have some pretty interesting stories of being a floor nurse. Mm-hmm. I remember one, you got like chased down by a psychotic person and almost choked by one.
Yeah. She tried to choke me. And this
is, my gosh, wait, there was this one where she came to your house.
Yeah. I only have a couple of stories that are a teensy bit scary. I mean, most of my career over 30 years in psychiatric nursing has been awesome. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. I still love it. It is, you know, it's a different field. It's unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And I'm highly trained in how to handle like different unpredictable situations, but you know, and sometimes things happen because people aren't in their right minds. They're not thinking right, and they're sick. And, there was a one patient who actually, she was a student nurse and she was awesome, smart. But she had depression and anxiety, and she had relationship issues. And I was very young. I was only like 25 then, and she wasn't that far behind me. and being her nurse every day for 6 weeks, 5 days a week, you develop a real bond. And that's what psych nursing is all about, is developing a bond with your patient so that they trust you to help you figure out the solutions to their problems. That's mm-hmm. the whole basis of psych nursing, mm-hmm. Being therapeutic. And we developed a really good, really close bond. And I liked her a lot. I felt bad for her for all the things she was dealing with in her life. But she took it a little too far. And this is where you set boundaries with patients, in that I'm your nurse here. That's it. I'm your nurse from 7 to whatever 3, but we can't be friends. I can't have you over. We can't hang out. And she kind of got a little confused about that. And it's a long story, but she found out my address, through a friend of hers who worked on the unit with me, who gave my personal information, which she got fired for, because you don't do that. And your dad and I were married about 6 months, and she showed up at the door, and I was like shocked. And of course your dad knows nothing about psych nursing. Mm-hmm. He thinks I go play pool all day, which I did play pool some, and we do therapeutic fun things, you know, but that's not all I did. And I'm like, okay. She told me she had taken an overdose, so I needed to get her to the hospital. And I called 911, but they were busy. They couldn't come and get her. There was a crisis team that tends to psych emergencies, and they were already on another call. So I said, look, I'm just going to take her to the hospital. I mean, I know her well. I'm just going to take her because I don't know what she took. She wouldn't tell me, blah, blah, blah. And I took her to the hospital, and on route to the hospital, she pulled a gun out of her pants because her dad was a cop. Her dad was a cop, and she took his gun, and she was going to kill herself with it. And she handed it to me. She said, I think I better give you this before we get to the hospital. And I'm so glad she did. And she was never threatening to me at all. She trusted me totally, which is a good thing, but it was not a good thing that it spilled over into my personal life.
Right.
But, I got her into the ER, and they took care of her, and, the cops came and took the gun, and it was loaded. And
oh my gosh.
So, you know, a life was saved that night.
Yeah.
Because of that bond. Yeah. And I, you know, that's just the fulfilling part of my career, is when you, if you can keep somebody from committing suicide, that, you know, if you can help them see. And then, so she stayed in a hospital for a while. When she got out, I ran into her again in a grocery store.
I didn't know this.
I ran into her in the grocery store, because this was, I'm not going to say where it was. It was in a very small town, and it wasn't unlikely to run into my patients out in the community. And she apologized for putting me in that situation. And
she seemed better.
She seemed better. And I have always wondered to this day how, if she finished nursing school, if she became a nurse, if she did fine, but we moved shortly after that, and I lost all contact with her and have no idea.
Wow, I wonder.
But that's a very rare, that was the scariest thing that happened in my whole career over 30 years.
Well, that's good.
And it turned out good for at least at that point.
Wow. That's insane. So on top of all that, you know, being a mom, you know, being a psych nurse and going through grad school with us kids, you were also teaching aerobics. Were you teaching spinning at this point yet?
No, I was not teaching spinning.
So you were teaching aerobics. You had like the leotards with the
with the little skimpy little panty things that go over top of the leotards and the off the shoulder
and then the socks
and the leg warmers.
Yes.
Just think Jane Fonda.
Yes,
exactly. On a lesser scale.
That was you.
I taught high impact aerobics. I taught step aerobics. I taught strength classes. Yeah, I've been certified.
I remember one time you sprained your ankle in a step class. Was that spinning? I can't remember. I remember you sprained your ankle and like you were my mom and it like devastated me.
Wait, was that when I ruptured my Achilles? I just sprained my ankle.
You just sprained your ankle. It was when I was really young.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm kind of recalling that. Yeah.
But so you've been doing that for almost as long as you've been a psych nurse, right? Well, not aerobics, but being in the fitness industry.
I've been in the fitness industry since about 1985, before I even graduated from college.
Wow.
I started teaching.
Wow. And so nowadays, well, because you're moving, nowadays your thing is spinning. Like yeah. you're a savage spin instructor.
Savage
that people love. I used to be able to do it. I can't do it anymore.
You could, you're young,
but you've changed people's lives doing that too. You know, like that's just amazing. And what's your plan with that here? Are you going to try and get a job here doing spin instructing?
Well, you know that one of your sister's yeah. best friends,
Amy Howe
from Gainesville owns a cycle studio here. Mm-hmm. And I've gone to take classes there, and she and I just had a conversation, and she's going to bring me on as a sub because I don't want to commit to a class yet until I kind of get settled with my schedule.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go on as a sub. And she said she already has had some messages on, I don't know, social media from some Ohio State girls that want me to do a private spin for their bachelorette party in March.
What?
Yeah.
That's so awesome. And I've done stuff have like to that. Attend that.
Yeah, you should. I think I will. So she's
so cool.
She asked me if I would be willing. I was like, yes, that sounds so fun.
You're the perfect guys. My mom went to both my bachelorette party and my sister's bachelorette party. Like, who invites their mom to the bachelorette party? We do.
I didn't even know that was a thing until you guys did that.
We brought our aunts too, though, and yeah. Bonnie, and it was oh yeah. my gosh, one of the best times ever.
It was fun, but us 50 and older gals couldn't hang as long with
yes,
the younger
you
girls.
Did? Are you kidding me? Like, you guys hung more than I did. Well, fun. Good time. So, you know, we talked about your early life as a mom, or early motherhood. Let's talk about your childhood. And we joke about this a lot. I know Dad, especially, because he talks about how he like saved you.
You know his nickname. What's his nickname for me?
Miss Ross County.
Well, no, that's a real name.
That's a real thing.
No, Corn Cob. He's always called me Corn Cob. Like, as long as he's known me, he's called me Corn Cob because I grew up on a farm in the middle of cornfields.
We joke that you grew up in a trailer pretty much.
And I did.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even a joke. I did.
Yeah.
I lived in a trailer on a farm.
Wow.
In a very, very teeny tiny rural community in South Central Ohio.
Mm-hmm. What's the community called?
Frankfort.
Right.
Frankfort. Right. And I went to a high school that K through 12, mostly the same kids. And I graduated with 79 people in my class.
Wow. What was your favorite thing to do on the farm?
Oh, we had so much fun. We like all my friends had farms. So when we went to each other's houses, we would do like, you know, play in the hay mow and jump out of the hay mow and have Chinese chickens chase us. And in the what? Yeah, my friend had Chinese chickens and they're aggressive and they chase you. So we would antagonize.
I'm Googling these right now. Chinese chickens.
We would antagonize them so that they would chase us. So we would squeal. And
everyone,
scream.
You have to Google Chinese chickens right up? Now. Yeah, they're like fluffy.
I never Googled them ever. Back then we didn't have Google.
Yeah, they're like white and fluffy. They have like afros.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
And they're aggressive. And we used to squeal and run.
You ever go cow tipping?
I never once tipped a cow. Never. I know that's a big like rumor that farm kids do that. I did not.
Did you have cows?
We did. Had cows. We had a horse. We had some pigs. We had guineas, which are these ugly gray birds. And one attacked me once because I walked by the barn and she had babies. And she flapped all over my head and I screamed and my dad jumped a fence to run and save me. Yeah.
Save you? Like it was a threat.
Well, he thought I was really hurt.
Oh,
I was just screaming. It was this gray bird flapping all it's like that bird did on Miami Beach. That went South Beach. That one
stole your sandwich.
Yes. Seagull. No, we had fun. We did fun stuff. Like we didn't have video games and computer, nothing. We were outside. I rode my bike down the hill of my lane as fast as I could and fell off I don't know how many times and skinned my knees and
wow rough. I'm just kidding.
Snowmobiling in the winter and sledding on a
since you were the oldest of your family of the kids, did you have like more of a role on the farm of like maintaining the farm? Like
I had way more
chores.
Yeah, I baled hay.
Yeah,
I physically lifted the bales and put them on the elevator up to the hay mow and helped stack them in the hay mow. Sometimes when I got lucky, I got to drive the tractor. That was the fun day. And I didn't mind baling hay, even though it was July and it was 100 degrees and 100% humidity, because my grandpa used to invite all these like teenage boys over and pay them to help us. Oh. And that was fun.
Wow. So then you moved out when you were 18 and you went to college.
Mm-hmm. University of Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. And that's where you met Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, well, before we go into that, I feel like this podcast is going to end up being like 2 hours long.
I know.
I feel like there's so
much that's okay
to talk about.
What do we have to do?
Well, let's backtrack a little bit to, I think, something that's pretty unique about you that a lot of people don't know about you. And that's your birth mom, your biological mom. So she was young when she had you, right? How old was she?
So my parents went to the same school that I did. My dad had the same bus driver that I did. And wow. My parents were 15 and 17 when my mom got pregnant with me. And in that tiny little town where everybody knows everybody, that was tough to have that happen. It was a big deal. It was, I mean, I wasn't there, so I don't know all the repercussions of it, but just imagine living in a town where my mother's family was a pretty well-to-do family in the community. My grandpa had his own income tax business. My grandma was a nurse. Mm-hmm. And then my dad's parents were railroaders and farmers, and they lived on the farm where we did.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they got pregnant that young.
It was a big deal.
And so, something else, I don't even know if you know this, Gigi, but I told this story at the Women's Center in Columbus, Ohio, the Catholic center where they help women who have become pregnant, you know, by accident. Mm-hmm. They help them to have alternatives to abortion.
Right.
Yeah. Which I'm very opposed to abortion. So, and I'm not ashamed to say that, but right. My grandma, which I know my mima would, I know she hated that she did this, but she offered my mom an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if you knew that. Did you?
I did. And I was going to ask you about that, cause I don't remember if that was something if it was true or not, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah. My aunt Colleen, who's 6 years older than I, was my mom's sister. And she told me that.
Because she couldn't be a mom. She was too young to be a mom.
She's 15 years old. Yeah. 15 years old and in a small town where it's embarrassing and humiliating. And my mom said no.
Wow.
She said no, not doing it.
Wow.
So my parents got married and I was born I was born in December of 64 and my mom's birthday was in August. So she was 16 when I was born and my dad was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And they did get married.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So young. Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, at least they were doing the right thing.
They did what they thought.
Yeah.
They did what they thought was the right thing.
Right. But that's very crazy to actually think about, because a simple decision like that, we wouldn't be here having this conversation right now. And that's just insane to think about that decision is the reason why we're here today and have done some really cool things in our life.
I think, oh my gosh, that would be a really hard thing to happen. And it's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
But God always plans each and every one of us. So even though my mom and dad were 15 and 17, he planned me anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so, like, I don't think about that a lot, but it's.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want people to go out and get pregnant. Don't do that. But
smart and responsible.
Yeah, be smart and responsible. And just, I mean, God definitely planned me, because my life has been awesome. Yeah. I mean, I've had some tragedies, which we're probably going to get to here. But so my parents did get married. And my dad went to work on the railroad right out of high school, like my grandpa did, and ran the farm. So that's what they did.
Well, I mean, that's another great point. There's a verse in Psalms, I think Psalm 139, that says, for God knit you in your mother's womb, and that you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and that his works are wonderful. And so that, just going off of what you just said, that like God planned me, like he doesn't make mistakes, you know?
No. He knew the number of hairs on my head and I shouldn't have been conceived.
Right.
I mean, you know, by you know, our world standards, I shouldn't have been conceived,
but there's another verse in the Bible that says he does work for the good of all those who love him and are called according to, so yeah, maybe it was
my favorite verse.
Yeah.
My favorite verse.
It was a noobs, but he turns it into good. So, you know, yep. good stuff, but yeah. So going into after your mom had you when she was 16, you said there was a tragedy. So going into when you were about a year old,
10 months old. But before that, so there, you know, my mom's claim to fame, other than having a child so young, was she actually went back to high school after she had me. And no one in the history of my high school had ever done that.
Wow. So savage.
Colleen and I, you know, kind of joke about that. Like, wow, she was a trailblazer. Yeah, no, she went back to school. So, you know, like back in the old days, parents used to ship their pregnant daughter off to a convent or something and have their baby disappear. And hide them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she had me and, you know, they got married and then she came back to high school.
Wow. And she wanted to graduate.
Yeah.
Wow.
She wanted to go to college. She was going to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah, she went back to high school, but then, when she was 17, I'm trying to remember. Oh, so it was October of 65,
mm-hmm.
October of 65. So I'm 10 months old and she and I are in the car and she's driving up the lane to our farm. Mm-hmm. And, there was a curve in the lane and I lived in this lane for, you know, 18 years. So I still live there even after this.
Wow.
She rounded a curve. It's a gravel lane and she skid on gravel and there was a tree and she hit it head on. And, you know, no seat belts, no car seats. I was in the car. She had a head injury and broke her jaw, but she carried me from the accident up to the barn, which is about a half a mile. Mm-hmm. And my grandpa was in the barn. Mm-hmm. So she carried me with a head injury and a broken jaw. And I had a bump on my head and a black eye. And then they got her to the hospital. And, you know, it's 1965. They didn't have the technology that we have today. And they didn't know she had a hemorrhage going on in her brain. Oh. So they kept her overnight. They wired her jaw shut to fix the jaw and kept her overnight to watch her. But she decompensated overnight because she was having this brain bleed they didn't know about. And then she passed away and they couldn't, it was too late to save her.
Uh-huh. Did your dad ever talk about like his experience from this time or what all do you know about it? Like, you know, the story, but anything other than just the story?
My dad never talked about it until I was a teenager. And he brought it up one time. After that, he brought it up one time. And then he said a couple more things about her through my life, but it was hard for him to talk about. He was very devastated by what happened. Even after marrying my stepmom, you know, well into my life, he let me know that he was devastated.
Do you remember that first conversation you had with him where he was like, "Mama is actually not your real mom"? Like,
I was two when he married Marlene, my stepmom. Marlene. I don't remember that, but all I remembered though is he told me to call her Marlene, not mom.
Wow.
So that's why I've always called her Marlene.
So one thing I remember you telling me one time that you used to have like dreams about your biological mom.
Well, my paternal grandmother told me when I was a baby, before I could speak well, I mean, I could speak some, she told me that I told her that there was this woman that I would see that would like go, ooh, like over my bed, which is kind of
like,
I mean,
ghosty type.
Kind of. I mean, I don't
like, was it scary? Did she say
no.
Was like the way you described it was scary?
I wasn't scared, but she said I wasn't scared. I just talked about this lady.
Wow.
I forgot about that until you just said that. She told me that I told her about that a couple of times and she was convinced it was my mom, but you know, I don't know how I feel about ghosts or whatever, but you know, here I'm a little baby, like a year and a half old. And so who knows?
Wow. Are there pictures of your real mom somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh,
I have pictures of her and my dad. I have pictures of my dad and her going to prom. because that was the last picture that was taken of her. So my grandma had a lot of pictures made of her, and she's in a beautiful strapless white dress, and my dad's in a tux, and we've been moving, so I don't know where it is right now, but have you never seen it?
I don't think so.
Well, when I find it, I'll show you. Yeah. It's a beautiful picture. She had dark hair, and
Did they say you look like her?
I think I look like more like my dad. I look at pictures of my dad and me, and I look more like him, but. Mm.
So even though this is something that happened when you're 10 months old, and it's like you grew up not really knowing anything different. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think this impacts you in any way, or?
Well, I don't remember her at all. Yeah. Of course, I remember nothing about that. And my first memory I have is sitting at my paternal grandma's house up at the top of the lane, watching our trailer be pulled into the lane and setting it where we were going to live. Mm-hmm. So that was sometime when I was two. Mm-hmm. And then I had stepmom. So I had my grandparents, both sets of grandparents helped raise me for a year and a half until my dad married my stepmom. Mm-hmm. And then my paternal grandma, my mama, she told me that they tried to keep me, but my dad wouldn't allow it.
Oh, you were just so loved. You were a cute kid. I've seen pictures of you as a kid. Like, you were cute.
So I had five parents, and then I had six parents. Like, all of my grandparents were more like parents than grandparents, which was awesome. I you guys never had that because we didn't live near any of the grandparents. So
that was
special. And that's the way it was back in the old days. You grew up with your whole family around.
Yeah. So then you grew up and 18 years old, moved to Cincinnati, went to the University of Cincinnati.
Didn't know one soul, not one.
Wow. What made you want to go to Cincinnati?
Well, I applied to Ohio State and Cincinnati and got accepted into both, which I would never get into Ohio State today. I don't know if I get into UC today, but I definitely wouldn't get into Ohio State today. I picked UC and I wanted to be a nurse. I knew I wanted to be a nurse. I picked UC because when you go to the nursing program at UC, you're immediately admitted. Mm-hmm. Ohio State makes you apply as a sophomore to get into the nursing program as a junior. And I was like, why do I want to go just like take things for 2 years and then to get in? I wanted to get right in.
Right.
So I went to University of Cincinnati. That was the sole reason that I went to UC. And I'm so happy I did, because you wouldn't be here.
I know.
You wouldn't be here.
Thank goodness for Ohio State not having their nursing.
Still that way.
Oh, really?
It's still that way. Yeah.
So you got there. What year did you meet dad?
May of 1984.
Well, what year in freshman school? You were freshman.
End of my freshman
and
year.
And didn't you have a boyfriend at the time?
I did.
You had a boyfriend.
Back home in Frankfort, Ohio.
But then let's talk about the first time you met dad.
So this story has been told. I joined a sorority, Zeta Tau Alpha, because my grandpa Reed, my educated, college educated grandpa said, listen, you got to join a sorority. The Greek community runs the campus. So I had no idea even what a sorority was. I didn't even know what he was saying. And then I found out once I got there, then I, got some education about it. And I joined Zeta Tau Alpha, and quickly that was the best thing ever because I met people. I mean, not only my roommates, which my roommates were my friends, good friends. Two of my roommates joined with me. And one of the girls next door joined with me. So we had some student nurses in Zeta, which was great. And then May of 1984, Sigma Chi fraternity has this party week that's called Derby Days because the Kentucky Derby is at around the same time. So all the sororities convene at the Sigma Chi house all week, like every evening, and do all these competitions. Some of them are athletic, some are like funny things, whatever. So one of the competitions was make a Sig smile without touching him. So I came up with this great idea. Me, little conservative farm town girl, Shelly, I got a Playboy magazine. And
how did you get a Playboy magazine?
I bought it. But I do
Where
remember
did you buy it?
I do remember seeing them, and my grandpa had them
hiding under his like mattress.
You know, my
something.
Cousin Brian.
Yeah.
Brian and I would stay at Mima and Reed's every mm-hmm. weekend, and we would find these Playboy magazines. Oh my God. So I knew about it because he had them. No, he didn't hide them. They were just sitting out like coffee table books. So I bought a Playboy magazine, and I don't know, I went into the drugstore, bought a Playboy magazine, and I opened it up to the centerfold, and any Sigma Chi brother I passed, I'd flash it and say, does this look like me? And all you have to do is make them smile. And of course they would laugh because it clearly did not look like me. And your dad was one of the guys I did this to in a stairwell in the fraternity house. I was walking up the stairs. He was coming down and I did it. And he grinned and I'm like, okay, give me your cross. Cause they carry these paper crosses and every cross you collect, cause that's their symbol. Yeah. You get points. Mm-hmm. So it's all about earning points all week. Mm-hmm. So the next guy that came down the stairs, he came down. I go, who was that? The guy in front of him. He goes, oh, that's UB. I go, UB, what kind of name is that? He said, well, his real name's Urban. I go, Urban, what kind of name is that? Never heard the word urban for a man ever. And so then I'm like, oh, he was really cute. That was what I thought. He was really cute. And then the next day I was over there again, cause we were doing another competition, blah, blah, blah. I'm standing outside. And one of the brothers comes over and says, hey, that guy up there wants to talk to you. And he, your dad, was up in his, laying on his bunk bed, looking out the window at all the activities going on. And
you saw him looking out the window?
Yeah, he was looking out the window. And the guy goes, hey, he wants to talk to you. He pointed at him. I looked up and it was him. He did not remember I was the one that flashed him the centerfold the day before. No, he didn't even know. So anyway, he came down and we talked for, I don't know, probably 30, 45 minutes. And I told him I couldn't go out with him because I had a boyfriend.
But you did, didn't you?
Not then. Not yet.
Maybe the next time.
Not yet. You young girls, just don't listen to me on this. This was back in 1984, okay?
It's okay. Yeah. I think you made the right decision.
Oh.
So you guys go to school together, and then dad becomes a GA at Ohio State, right? And then wait, what happens? Did you move there with him?
No, I graduated. He moved first because he was a year ahead of me.
Oh.
So he moved to Ohio State and he was a GA, and I was mm-hmm. still at Cincinnati for one more year. Mm-hmm. And we had the long distance thing. Mm-hmm. And then I moved with one of my sorority sisters to Columbus to work at a hospital, a psych hospital in Worthington.
Did you move there for dad?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I applied all over Columbus to psych facilities and I got this awesome job at a psychiatric hospital. Mm-hmm. And she and I were roommates, and then he lived with some other GAs mm-hmm. and he had another year to GA.
And then you guys got engaged before he went out to Illinois State.
Yes. Yes. Oh. Because he got a job at Illinois State University, because GA is 2 years. Then you mm-hmm. have to get a job. And he said, okay, well, when you move to Illinois, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not moving to Illinois. I really like my job here. And he's like, but I'm moving to Illinois. I'm like, yeah, well, I need a commitment. I'm not going to just follow my boyfriend all over the United States. And he goes, I need a commitment. He goes, okay, well, you got one. I go, no, not good enough. I need a ring. I need a date. We need to get this thing going. It had been 4 years at this point. It had been 4 years. Yeah. So then
So he proposed. You guys were in a hot tub, right?
Yeah. In Bradenton.
Oh, because he was playing baseball? Or no, that was way earlier. Oh.
We were on spring break at my grandma's friend's house, an old couple in Bradenton. And yeah, his plan to propose on the beach got ruined because it rained. So he proposed at the house.
In the hot tub.
Well, not in the hot tub. We got in the hot tub after for the pictures.
Oh.
It wasn't like we did with you girls where all the families are there and it's a big production. And he just proposed and he had a dozen red roses in the closet and he pulled them out.
Do you remember what he said?
Not the exact words. I just think he said, "Will you marry me?" And he had the ring.
So romantic.
He had the ring on his little finger. And it was cute.
Aww. Okay.
And then we celebrated with my grandparents' friends.
That's awesome.
They were so sweet.
There is a picture somewhere of you guys
in the hot tub.
Yeah, in the hot tub.
After the move, it may surface somewhere.
Yeah. So you get married. Is that before you moved to Illinois State?
Mm-mm.
Oh, wow.
We moved to Normal, Illinois.
Okay.
And got married July of 89.
And you had braces.
I had braces. Yep.
And a pink dress.
And a pink wedding dress, which was beautiful, which.
It is beautiful.
You and Nikki, it just didn't suit your style, but.
You know, what's crazy though, that we all tried it on and we all fit in it. It fit
perfect.
Yeah.
You would have had no alterations.
I know.
I didn't have any alterations. Perfect. It came off a mannequin onto my body. It fit perfect.
That's wild.
Zero alterations.
That's crazy.
And it cost $500.
Nowadays, mine wasn't that much more than.
No, you and Nikki did good.
Yeah. All right. So where did I want to go from there?
So now we're married.
Oh, yeah, we're married. We're married. One of the things that Dad and I talked about when I had him on my podcast a couple of weeks ago was just the grind of his early on, like, coaching career, and how you supported him. Like, he was making like no money. And so you were working as a psych nurse and making most of the income and supporting him at one point in his life. But there were a couple of times where he came across opportunities that were going to, that he thought were better than just like coaching. So he talked about like the forklift opportunity, right?
Well, he did that on the side.
Yeah.
Because he was making no money.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked a forklift on the night shift to have income.
Yeah. He said he did that for a month, but then he said the guy offered him a full-time job.
Did he? I forgot.
For like $30,000 a year. And he said that he came to you and said, "I think I'm going to do it because it's money." And you're like, "No."
I don't remember that one.
Really? The lawyer one, though.
I remember the lawyer one. Yeah. Yeah. Because he got frustrated with the situation. And he's like, I'm done with coaching. I'm just going to go to law school. I'm like, don't let this one situation
really
mess up your dream. You can't make decisions when you're in crisis mode.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're disgruntled and all that, don't make a big decision like that right now. Let's like, just don't let one situation ruin your whole dream.
Wow. Were there any other times where Dad was like, "Yeah, I'm done"?
Mm-mm.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, he's been done a couple times.
Right? Oh, well, yeah, I mean, but early on.
No, not like that. No.
That would have changed like the trajectory of his.
Totally.
Our lives.
Totally.
Are you pretty happy that he stuck with the coaching?
Game? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you know, no matter what you do in life, there's going to be struggles and there's going to be hard times. This one just had a unique set of challenges because of the high profile position he had. So it brought other things that were, you know, like really hard to deal with, but I'm sure driving a forklift has its challenges and you have things that you go through that aren't fun, but no, we've had so many rewarding things come from this profession that like way overshadow the few negative things that have happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think to an extent there's like, there's definitely a lot of good things, like really cool things that we've got to experience, but I think it comes with a lot of like just harsh things too. Like people only, you know, a special person or special, you know, people can handle. Like, I don't think many people would be able to handle what we've kind of dealt with, you know?
Well, I think you just learn as you go.
Yeah.
You learn on the job for sure. You learn, and you guys have had a different, like, I didn't have to go certain things that you had to go through as kids of him, but just as the wife, you just have to remember that you believe in what you're doing and whatever anybody else says doesn't mean anything.
It's noise.
And it's really hard to not let that eat at your psyche and your self-esteem and your, but I've just learned so many times after what I'm on the inside of this issue, what the media is saying is not what is going on with this issue. So whatever media, whatever, they don't know, they make up things, they exaggerate things, they, and I know that. And you know what? In the end, it's never, none of that's going to matter anyway, ever. Mm-hmm. We, you know, it's just frustrating that there's so many people that just try to take you down because they want to take you down because mm-hmm. whatever reason they're,
yeah,
they don't like you because you're successful or they're jealous or they, I don't know. I don't even know why. I've never been that way. I've never done that to anybody. So I don't know.
That's a good point. That's a good point that like the problems that we've dealt with, while some are like real, like dad's health, like, you know, certain things that we've dealt with that have been real. I think one of the bigger things that we've had to deal with our entire life is media and people's opinions and people saying things,
Twitter
and like you said, at the end of the day, none of it matters. It's just noise. And you kind of have that power to give it life or not. Like it doesn't exist in our world unless we like let it exist, you know, but like real things, real issues like dad's health or our health or our relationships or, you know, the grandkids or like things like that. That's real problems. And if you think about, like, I always just go back to Lauren, the girl on my team and her mom, you know, dealing with brain and breast cancer, like that's real, you know? And so speaking, you know, with that perspective, like we've had it pretty good, you know?
Well, I'm very grateful that all of the challenges that we've been through, because he chose a profession that brings like a unique set of things to deal with, that our family has stayed close. Mm-hmm. It could have ripped us apart. Right. So many things could have ripped us apart. Like you guys could have said, I'm out, not dealing with this. But it never has.
I don't know why that never even crossed my mind that was and I think that's because you and dad, you know, have both done a really good job, like, you know, in embodying and embracing the value of just like family. And it kind of forced us to, you know, like that was the only thing we knew was family, because we moved around so much and mm-hmm. we changed settings and changed, you know, literally locations on the other side of the country. And it was just like us, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was like us against the world, our entire lives. And I think it was like, yeah, I don't know. So, but yeah, you're right. We could have been like, peace out. I'm not going to be a part of this, but no, I think we have like the most supportive family ever too. So
we do. And we're so thankful that you kids have stuck it out with us.
Yeah. I mean, well, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Like, I guess we didn't really like close out like you and dad's journey.
Well, and I will say, I do need to say this about my childhood. I was raised in a very conservative Christian family. I went to church 3 times a week and had a family Bible study on a fourth night. So that, if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be who I am today. And I'm grateful for that. That definitely made me a strong person. Plus just growing up doing the like chores on a farm, it just like, you're just like, it just contributes to your strength is like, you know, the value of hard work and accountability. Like when you're a family running a farm, you like, nobody can step out. You gotta like, you're all in. Mm-hmm. So I'm thankful to my parents for raising me in church. My dad was not a Christian until I was 15. So it was my stepmom that gets all the props for doing that. She's the one, because she was raised in a very, very, very Christian family. So it was her that had us kids all going to church. And then finally my dad at 15 got a wake up call and joined us. And that was, I was really thankful for that too. And then I wanted to bring that to you guys, even though, you know, dad was he is Catholic, but we're kind of non-denominational now.
You guys are like a hybrid.
We're a hybrid. He's a Catholic. I'm a non-denominational. I grew up Methodist. And now we love Rock City Church and miss it so much mm-hmm. in Hilliard. And we still watch it every Sunday when we're here in Florida. Mm-hmm. But we did a good job. Like it wasn't one of us trying to overpower the other with our, we got to go to the Catholic Church. No, we got to go to the Methodist Church or whatever. Mm-hmm. We raised you in both. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't even matter what church, as long as it's a godly church mm-hmm. and the message is true about Jesus. So,
right. And usually, I don't know if this is a, But I feel like Catholics usually are pretty like territorial. It's like when you, you know, transition from Catholic to Christian, that's like a big deal, right? Like, I don't know, but I remember dad just kind of like was okay with that. When I made that decision, I'm like, I don't want to be Catholic anymore. I'm going to be Christian. When I was 18, it wasn't like he was devastated by that, but do you think some Catholics do?
Well, I think he probably could have been more that way if he had married another Catholic and we were a staunch Catholic family.
Yeah.
We just wanted you guys to be in church. Mm-hmm. We just want you to be in church. We want you to believe in Jesus and we want you to know the truth. Mm-hmm. I don't care. And you can get that in a Catholic church. Mm-hmm. I don't care. It was really important for us to set the base for mm-hmm. you guys and to have you keep following that. Mm-hmm. It would have hurt us so much if any of the three of you would say, I'm not going to church anymore.
I know. Wow.
I would just be really sad and worried. So,
but no, I think that's a good point too, of like you being raised a certain way. I think that plays into the role you have in the family too, of like, who do you think is the most high maintenance in the family?
Dad.
Yeah. I think you're the most low maintenance. Nate's pretty low maintenance, but you coming from this humble background of like growing up in a trailer on a farm. And it's always like, you know, Nikki or me or dad, like we freak out about like the little things and you're like, chill out, like relax. Life is good. I feel like that's just your vibe. And I think that comes from just your background of, and how dad says that he saved you from like,
I mean, he kind of did.
There's nothing wrong with living in the boonies and in a trailer, but
if that's what you want, I just didn't want to stay there. Yeah. And I was glad to meet him and move on.
Yeah. But would you agree that's kind of like your vibe just in the family?
I don't get wigged out much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever, do you recall a time I've been the one that's
never get wigged out.
No, I am. But then also you got to think of my 30 plus year history as a psych nurse. Yeah. I've seen some pretty bad stuff.
Yeah.
And every time I think of what my patients that I've seen gone through, I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I'll take this.
Well, here's a perfect example. Like you still do coupons.
I do.
Mom still uses coupons. She tries to save money in every way she possibly can. Like she never wastes stuff. In fact, like in this moving process, we realized you save way too much stuff. And
I have all my old furniture. Like I don't want to buy new furniture.
You're a very frugal person. And so is dad too. But like, I don't know. I just think because of your humbling background, you've bring like our family to just a lower level of maintenance, but then dad like brings it back up.
He's getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is getting better.
CVS's 2 foot long coupon rolls are my friends.
Nikki makes fun of you so much for that.
Where did I lose her? She doesn't use a coupon ever.
Anyways, so I just want to end with a couple of questions for you. Right. And one is, what's one of the biggest challenges in your life? And how do you think this challenge led to a lesson? And I know this is kind of like a deep question out of the blue. Do you have an answer?
Gosh, there's probably several.
Well, you can share several.
I'm trying to think of like the biggest challenge I've had. And I would say one challenge in living this kind of blessed life that we've had mm-hmm. is just staying humble and staying grounded mm-hmm. and not thinking I'm more than I am. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to be that way. I don't want to be that person that people say, oh my gosh, she's so stuffy. Mm-hmm. And I can't, you know, you can't approach her. You can't talk to her. She's got all this money. I mean, the money, you know, yeah, he's made a lot of money. Mm-hmm. He's been a great coach. Mm-hmm. He's had a great career.
He's worked hard.
But I don't forget where I came from, mm-hmm. where I think my dad might've made $30,000 a year and raised 5 kids. Wow. And there were times he probably didn't make that much. Mm-hmm. So I know where I was. I know that I was blessed by God so many times, like even though losing my mom, like everything had a reason for things happening. So, I'm thankful for the way I was raised, that I could stay the way I was raised. And doesn't mean I don't like to have my hair blown out or my nails done or my, or a pedicure sometimes, but I'm thankful for everything. I don't take anything for granted. I just really try not to.
I think you've established that. Everyone that knows you or doesn't know you thinks that you're one of the most personable people, one of the most approachable people ever.
Come talk to me
sometimes. I know sometimes that drives like people in our family nuts, because it's like, we're not as personable. We're not as social as you. And then you just like talk to everyone, but that's a good thing. Like because I think, making people feel special, like you do that really well. And I think that's important.
I love people. I want people to talk to me. I absolutely love, like, there's no way you can be a nurse if you don't love people and just love interacting. Like even when I run out and say hi to the tour boats that go by, you know, I wave and I just want to be nice. I just think it's nice to be nice. And I left Twitter because people got so mean, and it just feels good to be nice. Like how does it feel good to be mean? It doesn't. It feels good to just be a nice person and a good person.
Back to kind of what you were saying, where you don't want to be that person that like gets put on a pedestal because of, you know, some things that you've accomplished in life, the money you make.
Right.
Well, two things about that. One thing I've noticed, I mean, obviously I've grown up in this family and when you guys didn't have money, like I was young, too young to really realize. And so we've always, you know, been pretty,
I still dressed you cute.
Yeah.
Somehow I dressed you
still
cute.
Took care of us. Yeah. I had like the, what do you call it? With the ponytail on top of your head,
right on top and of your
all
head,
the cute. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. We were so cute. But I did eventually get to a point where I had to start making my own money, and I didn't have a lot. And even though I wasn't living like on the street or in a really crappy place or anything, like you guys took care of me, but I did know to an extent what it looks like to have like an empty bank account. And now like with my own business, you know, we're doing pretty good now. And so I'm making, you know, a lot more money than I was before. But one thing that I've noticed, and I think has been a really cool lesson for me, but I think that you have some insight on, is, you know, whether you have like 40 grand in your bank account, or if you have 400 grand in a bank account, or if you have 4 million in your bank account, like it doesn't feel any different.
Mm-mm. Nope. It doesn't to me.
Right.
I've never accelerated my spending.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, no, I can't say that. I used to do my own nails. I used to paint my own nails.
And, yeah. What did you do without?
And sheet prints were in my paint the next morning. And when I woke up, but
what did you do without a blow dry bar?
I did my own hair. I did my own hair. And notice I've had a bun for like 2 months? I haven't done my hair at all. I haven't gone to the
bar. But when you were doing it at the time, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like you were missing anything, because you didn't know that there was another. So now that there's another, you know, so it's like, it still feels the same. Like you're doing your hair and it's like, oh, this is great. I have the ability to do my own hair. But then like when someone does it for you, like it still feels the same. You know what I mean? So it's a lesson that I've learned myself, that it's like, I mean, I want to live a life that I can give, and like money's able to do that. And then also live a life where there's, you know, comfort and there's no stress around financials and whatnot. But, but people so much, and I think at a point in my life, like I was chasing, you know, a lot of money just because like, that's the thing to do. Like people, you know, just do it. But for someone that kind of has lived both ends of the spectrum, like pretty darn poor to like, you know, doing pretty well nowadays, like you could probably speak on that type of experience, you know?
Yeah. It just all goes back to like, why go just spend frivolously? Why, why do that? I don't have a reason to, I don't.
Right. Yeah.
And I've had to work. Like I had to work, you know, I still have been working. Like I worked last fall. I still work every fall. So just because I like it, because I love it, because I love to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, money does offer you a security because, you know, then you're going to be able to handle your bills and do whatever. But I really haven't changed all that much. Yeah. I still have my girlfriends from that I grew up with from kindergarten, and we still love to get together and hang out. And I'm the same with them as I was back then.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So Do you think you could go back and live on a trailer?
I think
if I had to, I mean, if something happened that I had to, of course, but I don't want to. I never wanted to go back to the farm. I like to be around people too much, and mm-hmm. that was too isolated for me. So
another question, what is one thing that you, I don't even know if I want to ask this. I don't know why I want to, what's one thing that you could change about yourself?
Ooh, that really puts me on the spot because everybody has something that they.
You're like, no, I'm perfect.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm definitely not perfect. What would I
do? I would probably be less.
Maybe less worried about politics than I am right now. Oh, don't even get me started
good
on that.
One. Yeah, we're not going to get started on that, but that is a good one for you.
I don't. Like, I usually don't worry. I'm not a worrier. I'm not a worrier.
You're not.
I try not because, you know, the Bible says, don't worry about today because tomorrow has its own problems. But just with everything going on right now, I am worried about it. And I've gotten way too, I just pay way too much attention to politics and I don't want to. I never did until these last 2 years.
I mean, you're not alone there. I think everyone's kind of,
I mean, it's not ruining my life right now. And I don't want it to ruin my life. I'm determined not to let it ruin my life, but it does. It is getting me down. And if anybody knows me, I don't like anything that makes me upset. Yeah. I don't want to be upset. Like mm-hmm. When we would lose a football game, I don't want to think about it the next day. Don't mm-hmm. try to ruin my week because we lost a football game. I mean, it might ruin yours, you mm-hmm. as a fan, but I'm not letting it ruin my week. So
I think there's actually some power in that. That awareness that you're like, I wish I wasn't so worried about it, but it's like, we ultimately have control of what we kind of allow into our conscious mind. You know what I mean? And as much as like, but it's hard right now to find that balance with the politics stuff. It's like, mm-hmm. I need to be informed and I need to know what's going on. But then at what point is it unbalanced to where it's like impacting the way I'm like functioning with my life, you know? Yeah. So I'm probably not informed enough. Like I don't even look at stuff because I know how it makes, I'm already an anxious person. Like it's going to make me more anxious and scared. So I'm not informed at all. Like I couldn't have a conversation about anything nowadays. And someone would be like, you're dumb for not knowing any of this stuff going on. But I'm like, I'm also happy, like, you know, right. to an extent, that I'm not involved in that. But then there's people who are like, you know, fueling, like just full on flooding their minds with this stuff, which if you just watch the news all day long, like, yeah, of course you're going to be scared and, you know, concerned. So it's hard to find that balance, you know, of being informed, but then not letting it just like destroy you and make right. you sad and scared, you know?
Right. It's a hard spot right
it
now.
It is, but all right. Well, who's your favorite kid? Just kidding.
Well, my favorite son is Nate and my favorite daughters are Gigi and Nikki and my favorite grandchildren are Troy, Gray and Sab.
Oh, how about Sab? She's the cutest thing ever.
So cute.
What's your favorite thing about me?
Oh, Gigi, my favorite thing about you is that you're like, you and Nikki are both so great, but you're so different. You know, she's the real, you've always been chill. You've always been chill. Mm-hmm. And I loved in high school when you were growing up, when you wanted nothing to do with girl drama mm-hmm. and you played all boys sports and you hung out with boys and those were your friends. You wanted nothing to do with that cattiness of girls. Mm-hmm. And I love that you have grown to be so independent and you've got your own business. My gosh. Like when I first heard you wanted to start this kind of business, me being in group fitness, I was like, huh, what? Nobody's going to work out online. And then COVID hit and you launched your business and then it was the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. And you've been such a resource for people. Even if it's not COVID related anymore, you're helping people who would rather just do it this way.
Right.
And you're not only doing fitness, you're spiritual mm-hmm. and you're opening your life up to people so that they know you're not just this, like, you have a great family. Yes, we have a great family, but you have your own things that you deal with. Mm-hmm. And everybody does. Everybody does. And I love that you've been so open about it, because that, you know, I've been a psych nurse for over 30 years. We've been trying to, you know, stop the stigma, break the stigma for all these years. And just when people like you speak out about your anxiety and all that, like that, you're helping so many people, like dad has when he mm-hmm. spoke out about his. I love that you're being so open and that you relate to people so well. And mm-hmm. you're so like easygoing. You've always been really easygoing. And I loved when you were a teenager, when Nikki had her little rough spot as a teenager, and you pulled me in your room and you go, "Mom, I will never do what Nikki's doing." And you did it.
Oh man.
But guess what? Nikki turned out wonderful too. Nikki's she was like the more normal teenager. You were like you just got to see, you didn't want any part of getting in trouble. That was it. You didn't want any part of getting in trouble.
Yeah. But, well, thank you.
But I'm so proud of you for what you're doing. And people, you know, I have people text me all the time that, like, my friends are like, "Oh my gosh, Gigi's so awesome. And she's in her program and all this." And I just think that's great.
Oh, thank you. So that brings me to asking you, how sad are you that you're losing your roommate?
I know. I'm not okay. I don't know if I'm okay with this, but you're going to be here all the time.
We're basically going to be neighbors. I know. I will literally be here all the time. Okay. So, room up there is still going to be my room.
Oh yeah. No, that's your room. It's your room. And Nikki's got her room. You've got your room. Nate's got this down here.
Nate's got the basement.
Yeah, Nate's got the basement.
Oh.
No, I mean, we quarantined together for 7 weeks when you were a newlywed.
Yeah, literally.
And we got along fine, I think. No, right?
We did, yeah. I mean, if we didn't, I would have been out. Like, we would have been in an apartment somewhere, just like throwing away our own money because it would be worth it. But we've
loved it here. We've come to an amicable like existence here. You know, you guys do your thing, we do our thing. Sometimes we do things together.
Is there anything that I do that annoys you around here? I know I leave the dishes in the sink sometimes. That doesn't bother you?
No.
I put them away, but then you do it sometimes.
Sometimes I do it. It's just like when you were growing up. Oh. No, I don't get it. I really don't get annoyed at all. I don't.
Good. Well,
it's been actually like special time that we've had to be able to do this.
Yeah, I agree. I know. And you guys are living here full time now. Yay. It's like forever.
I can do Shelly's loop whenever I want.
That was one thing. Did I ask you that? Was how do you feel like, I didn't even ask you that. This being your last move ever. And the amount of times you moved in your life was in the 20s.
My next move is heaven. No. We've been so lucky and blessed that we have not moved as much as some coaches. Really? So I always have to count them up. I moved from Columbus to Illinois, Illinois to Colorado, Colorado to Notre Dame to South Bend, South Bend to Bowling Green, Bowling Green to Utah, Utah to Florida, Florida to Columbus, to Jacksonville, to Sarasota, 9.
But including your move from Frankfurt to 10. UC and then UC to Columbus, so that's 11. So double digits, you made it in the double digits.
But some of our coaching friends have moved 20 sometimes with kids.
True, yeah.
This was really, one thing was we actually moved to Gainesville and you guys got to go to middle school and high school and stay for that whole time. We didn't have to move you. And that was, great.
That was great. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Mom. That was so much fun.
It was fun.
I'll have to have you back on. But like I said, I wanted to bring you on here because there are just some details of your story that I don't think a lot of people knew. And so thank you for sharing that today. Is there any other final thoughts that you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, we have to bring up Miss Ross County because every girl wants to be a princess, right? Or a queen or a beauty queen or whatever. So when I grew up, growing up on a farm, I was involved in 4-H for all of my childhood.
What's 4-H?
4-H is an organization that rural kids belong to, where you have meetings. And I was president, of course, of my 4-H club several years. So you gather and have meetings every month and you do charity things and you do you prepare for the fair, the county fair every summer, and you have a project. And some kids take livestock. I didn't. I did sewing. I did sewing. So I would sew something and make an outfit and then model it at the fair. Yeah.
You did that?
I did. I did. I did sewing.
Oh my gosh.
My grandma has a sewing machine that I could use. Wow. So the fair is like the big thing in Ross County. The Ross County Fair is actually amazing. It's like the most fun week of the whole year. You like get to run around all week and your parents don't care that what you're doing. And it was all actually good fun. I never did anything naughty, but
other people would do naughty things.
Well, probably now. Oh. I mean, back then, back in the, you know, 70s, no, yeah. 70s and 80s, but we were not into doing naughty things. We just didn't have to have our parents' supervision every second like you do now, because you have so many things to worry about now. And then my, you know, just one of my dreams as I, every year I would go as a child and watch the Ross County Junior Fair Queen contest. And I just would think these girls were so beautiful. And it was like watching Miss USA in my little fair. And then, I was also in FFA, which is Future Farmers of America. And I was FFA queen of my high school. So not that I wanted to be a future farmer.
But I know you're not a future farmer.
But oh no, I wasn't in FFA. They just elected me as their queen. So as FFA queen, and then I got nominated by my 4-H club to be in the Miss Ross County Junior Fair Queen contest. So I had to be interviewed and all this. And I then had to go to the fair and you have the pageant.
Wow.
And you have to answer a question, you know, like the fair, like the Miss USA's and all that. They could ask a question and you have to be able to speak, you know, bit intelligently and be poised. And
did you have a coach?
I did. It was my girlfriend who won the year before me.
Oh,
Karen Drummond. If you're out there, I'll actually text you, Karen, and you have to listen to this podcast.
Shout out.
She was the queen before me.
Is she the one that taught you the elbow wrist stress?
Oh no.
Elbow wrist stress.
That's just a joke about queens. Oh. She did, you know.
Oh, I thought
that's just
real.
How queens do it. Oh. I mean, they, you know, when you watch them, they kind of do. But Karen, she told me how to stand on the stage. She helped me with a dress. She kind of coached me up a little. And then it was really fun that then I won queen.
Wow.
Which is a big deal in Ross County. If you get to be Miss Ross County Junior Fair Queen, it's a big deal.
Apparently, yeah.
And then she got to crown me because she was the previous queen. Aww. So that was two girls from Edina High School in a row that won. So
did you go back recently?
I did go to a reunion. It's been a few years, but I did go to a reunion and all the,
like in the past couple of years, right?
No, it was
when?
It was at Ohio State, but it's been a while.
Oh, like you weren't you like showing a cow or something?
Oh, that was something different. Oh. I did show a heifer. Yeah. That was something different. That was for the Ronald McDonald House in Columbus.
Oh,
it was a charity event.
Oh,
but I did go back for a reunion of Queens a few years ago.
Really?
So, yeah.
Like in the past 10 years or?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. In the past 10 years, they had a queen reunion and I went back to the fair.
Were you so excited? And they had like a celebrity.
Well, and yeah, because of dad. Yeah. my queen thing wasn't even the big deal then. It was because I was married to Urban.
Yeah.
But no, that was a really fun, like that was like a dream. Like the best thing that ever happened to me and I was 18. I was just getting ready to go off to college. So I won that. And then, you know, and then you have to do your queenly duties all year, riding parades and all that.
Wow. Queen.
Give out the ribbons for the, you know, grand champion steer and the grand champion rabbit. And
wow. Well, if there's any former Miss County, Miss Ross County queens, do you have any advice for them who are carrying on the queen duties?
Oh, well, it's all about, you just have to answer your question. You can't like give a word salad answer for your question. You have to be intelligent and answer it.
Wow. How can you
be taught that?
Did your coach teach
you practice? You practice like my question was about like charity events that I had been involved in. And there was something about building benches that people could sit on in parks. And
that's how you
I said, yeah, we built these benches in, I don't know where it was, some park. I mean, this is so long ago. And I said, yeah, and there looked really nice. And it was a nice place to sit and converse.
That was the winning, the winning
whatever. Actually, it was mostly about like my grandparents were major influencers over the voters, and that's why I won.
That's awesome. Love it. Do you still have your crown?
No, but I have my sash.
Oh,
I have my sash upstairs.
All right. Well, we have a couple of things that we need to bring out of the packing boxes. Sash. What was the other thing?
Hot tub picture of dad and I when we got engaged.
And the picture of your mom.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
Cool.
We'll get it.
Mom, thank you so much for joining on the Live Limitless podcast. You're an awesome guest and we'll bring you back.
Thank you.
For a little checkup later on. But thank you. Love you.
Thank you. Love you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you all so much for listening to the Live Limitless podcast. If you enjoyed this episode today, do us a favor and share with someone you think will benefit from it. And if you just want to show general support, you can do that by leaving us a 5-star rating if you believe it deserves it. Or you can leave us a review or any type of feedback in Apple Podcasts. We want to hear from you. Also, make sure to check out the show notes for more information or to just see how you can keep up with me on social media. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Go crush the week and live limitless.